It happens like this. It's a Tuesday or Wednesday, one of those amorphous midweek days, neither quite the weekend, but at least not Monday. November. Grey rain coming down too vertically to pretend much longer, to yourself or anyone else, that it isn't really raining. Impossible to catch a minute's interest longer in the sad-mouthed, slightly ragged goldfish in the shallow ornamental pond. The pond is opposite a corporate law firm with a Dickensian name and persistent rumours of being built on Europe's largest medieval charnel house. There is a perspex floor that you can walk or crawl over, peering giddily down to where old Roman walls and bronze-cast statues lie. The layers beneath, the bones. The fish and the floor are usually enough to kill half an hour. There are sometimes a bus, too, an old red double-decker, repurposed into a puppet theatre. But not today. You're running out of ideas. The toddler is grizzling. The baby is grizzling. Any moment now, one or both of them will go nuclear. You lift the flap on the rain hood and reach in to stroke the baby's soft, damp cheek, and she turns her head and blindly rootles, trying to suck your fingers. You fed her just before you left the house, less than an hour ago. She can't be hungry again. Unless she's due a new growth spurt. How old is she again? Poor secondborn. You counted her brother's age religiously, days, weeks, months, until the months flipped more pragmatically into years. But you've lost count already of how many weeks the baby is. 12, you think? Or maybe 13? First time round, you agonised, laughed in disbelief, joked grimly about the tiredness. This time, there isn't the energy even for that. You're hungry, you say. Poor wee thing, you're hungry. And I, your toddler says indignantly. I hungry too, naughty mummy, he adds, because you made the cardinal error this morning of forgetting to refill the snack box. So, although you can't justify it now you're a family of four on one salary and a maternity pittance, into Frankie's in the covered market it is, one of the few places round here likely to be vaguely tolerant of little boys and babies, even in combination, at least until the lunch rush starts, for normal people who don't eat lunch at 11:17. Into Frankie's, order at the counter, today's lotto of foods that will or won't be eaten. Choosing a table, wrestling with a stack of recalcitrant high chair rejected, menu, crayons, layers of nursing vests and stubborn clips of nursing bras, and the howling baby finally latched on. Cutting up food left-handed, coaxing aeroplane mouthfuls in, baby breaking off and crying, burping baby, switching her sides, broken crayons, one more mouthful, sorry, I mean cargo plane, into the hangar. Transferring baby to buggy, easing her down, coaxing the straps over her shoulders, why didn't we get a buggy with a proper bassinet, and clicking them tight. Now finally your cup of tea, still warm because they make it with steam. I need a wee-wee, your toddler says. You turn to him helplessly. The disabled toilet is out of order again. You can see the yellow sign on the door from here. The unisex loos aren't wide enough for the buggy, and if you take the baby out now, she'll wake and howl. You'll have to feed her back to sleep, and she'll be sick because she's already gorged herself milk drunk. I need a wee-wee now, he says. Okay, you say, hang on. Go, the woman beside you says. I'll keep an eye on the pram. Just go. Are you sure? You say gratefully, already reaching for your toddler's hand. Thank you so much. Thank you. And you're hurrying with him to the toilets. And there. It's already happened. Just like that. Not even a second's split shiver of thought. You have exchanged polite, distracted snatches of conversation with this woman, it should be said. In the midst of your caravanserai of chaos, she's commented on the baby, said hello to the toddler and asked him what he's drawing. Good on you for breastfeeding. Best start for them, no doubt about it. I couldn't stick to it with mine. An obvious cue that you politely took up. Oh, you have children too? Oh, long grown up now. A boy and a girl, just like you. It flies by. Really? Believe you me, It doesn't feel that way in the trenches, but yes, it does. I'll take your word for it. It hits you while you're in the cubicle, bent holding him, back aching over the too tall toilet because he refuses to sit down, insists the boys wee standing up. You have left the most helpless, precious thing you own with a complete and utter stranger. No, you tell yourself. No. She has children too. She said so. And then you think, you don't even know the first thing about her. Of course you'd say you have kids. That's the first thing you'd say. And why was she so keen to strike up conversation with an obviously harassed and beleaguered new mum, so quick to insist that you leave her with the buggy? Hurry up, you snarl at your son. You couldn't even say what the woman looked like now. Brownish hair and glasses? Did she have glasses? 50? 60? Wearing something dark? You yank your son's pants and leggings up, bundle him through the cubicle door and past the sinks. But Mummy! He is outraged. I hasn't washed my hands! You has to wash your hands! You has to! Not this time, you snap. Come on! And you haul the protesting mass of him through the door, your heart slamming into your chest. The buggy is still there. For a moment, your limbs turn to jelly. You clutch your toddler's hand and steady yourself on the metal edge of someone else's table. The buggy is still there. The beating wing of some great, ancient, thwarted creature brushes past and through you. Sick with relief, you kneel and hug your son. Mummy's sorry, sweetheart. Mummy didn't mean to be cross. He blinks at you, unsure, uneasy, this little barometer of your every mood and thought, disturbed and confused by the sudden rush of conflicting pressures. Let's get your baby sister, and then would you like a cookie or a milkshake? He glares suspicious. A milkshake and a cookie. A Storby milkshake, he says, sensing the upper hand. And you're suddenly overcome with love for him, this two-foot tyrant who can't yet pronounce strawberry. You weave back through the tables to thank the woman. You can't see her at first, in the early lunchtime throng, a queue for the counter that snakes past your table. Excuse me, please. Your son chiming in. Beep, beep. The muslin draped over the buggy hood to shade the sleeping baby has fallen to the floor. Almost before you have registered it, something shivers through you. Those wings again, not defeated after all, not even retreating, just turning to make a closer circle, slow ripples in the air. They never find the woman or the baby. CCTV, Newsnight, the front page of the Evening Standard, nothing. Friends and well-meaning strangers say, it's not your fault, or it could have happened to anyone. But of course it is, and of course it couldn't, wouldn't. Your sweet, sweet baby, and the cluster of things you know about her. Her hands still in fists, and the way she'd started to laugh. The cracked, tender patches on her feet and elbows where you nightly rubbed in emollient. The way it felt to lay the warm, soft bundle of her down in her Moses basket, bottom first, then gently lolling head. The way she gazed in wonder at the mobile of aeroplanes above her changing mat. The nights after vaccinations where her temperature rose and her little body twitched and trembled and you held her, rocked her, bounced her. Her baby grow with the flamingos on and her little vest with dinosaurs. A tiny hand on your chest as she fed. Still, nightly, year after year after year, your body aches for her. The years slip by. They are 3 and 1, and chasing each other through the glittering fountains in a park. They are 4 and 2, and feeding the swans, eating oversized ice cream side by side. They are 5 and 7 on a trampoline, 8 and 6, 9 and 11, 12, 13, 14, teenagers, allies and enemies, officially adults, going, going, gone. The marriage doesn't survive, or rather, it does until the new baby's born and you feel too guilty and racked with anxiety to hold it, let alone risk loving it. Your husband goes for full custody of both, and you don't fight it. You stay together for the sake of the boy, but separate by mutual agreement once he turns 18, and of course you never have another baby. He doesn't remember his baby sister at all, though he sometimes pretends he does. "Mummy," your son says. "Mummy," tugging on your hand. "My baby," you say to the cafe in general. "Have you seen my baby?" Asking, in general and at random, too loud at first and then even louder. "My baby, have you seen my baby?" Some faces look at you, cease talking, wary, blank. "Your mother took her," someone says. "No, no, my mother's not here. She's not my mother. Where did she go? Did you see her? Where did she go?" The faces, blank. "Just over there, I think." The direction of the doors. The mass of people, faces, talking. A teenager, spot still on her cheeks, wearing the Frankie's baseball cap and badge. "Excuse me, can I help you?" And suddenly you can no longer speak, and suddenly, there she is. Wearing a navy jacket and jeans, tortoiseshell glasses, yes, and a bright silk scarf knotted round her neck. How could you have missed the scarf? Grey-brown hair in a bob, jiggling the baby in her arms. Your baby. "We woke up," she says, "didn't we? We woke up, so we went for a little walk. Yes, we did." "Is everything okay?" the Frankie's girl says, looking between you as you scoop the baby back into your arms. And oh, the warm heft of her. This is how she feels. This. The soft, downy hair on her head, her neck, the milky smell of her. This. "Everything's good?" the Frankie's girl says again. "She never wakes up," you say. The woman blinks at you. "She never wakes up," you say, feeling the pitch of your voice rising. "Once she's fed and asleep like that, she never wakes up unless she's disturbed." "Well, she woke up," the woman says, "and I didn't want to leave her crying, so I lifted her." Trudging home, drenched, unwieldy buggy board bumping down and up the slick curbs. Already the thought of anything other than this. Implausible. The veil between worlds, the skin closing over. A wanderer who visits another world and spends a lifetime there, only to return to their own and not a minute past. Just wanting this day to end now, that moment when the children bathed, tucked into bed, or zipped and poppered into duvet bag, flush-cheeked and open-mouthed, asleep and peaceful, you exhale. It's only just beginning.